What if we don't have to die? Would you want to live forever? It may sound like a crackpot question even to ask, but biomedical gerontologist Aubrey de Grey says there's no scientific reason why we can't conquer all the natural causes of death. So he's spearheading a campaign to do just that as chairman and chief science officer of the Methuselah Foundation, based in Cambridge, England. Now, I should say that de Grey is not your conventional scientist. He's a maverick. You see it right away. He even has a beard that hangs down nearly to his waist. And as Steve Paulson discovered, Aubrey de Grey is the rare scientist who ranges freely across all the research areas that study aging and dying.
How long do you think human beings could potentially live?
I don't think there is any inherent limit on how long humans can live with adequately comprehensive medicine. I think that we have plenty of precedent from simple man-made machines like cars or houses or aeroplanes or whatever. We know that if we can do sufficiently comprehensive maintenance on them, then they just don't get any less functional as they get older. We can keep them going indefinitely. And the human body is, after all, just a machine. It'll take us a while before we have sufficiently comprehensive technology, but one day we'll get there, and at that point, human lifespan will no longer be controlled by the natural rate of decay that happens in the absence of medicine.
When you say indefinitely, you're talking 500 years, 1,000 years, even longer?
Indefinitely means indefinitely. It will be determined by the rate at which we die from things that have nothing to do with how old we are, things like being hit by trucks and so on.
And how far into the future do you see this very long lifespan happening?
I think that we are getting pretty close. I think we're in striking distance of developing the sufficiently comprehensive biotechnology to give us this. I think we have maybe a 50-50 chance of getting there within the next 30 years.
Within the next 30 years of living to be 500 or 1,000 years old?
Of course, people will not be living to 1,000 years until 900 years from now or thereabouts. But in terms of the actual rate of decline, yes. The correct way to think about this is that simply we will be postponing, comprehensively, the age-related decline and disease and debilitation and dependence that we see. And there will be this side effect that, therefore, people will not die of aging. They will only die of other stuff.
Hmm. And when you're talking about people living to be very old, I mean, you're not talking about people sort of doddering around when they're 300 pushing a walker. I mean, you're talking about a 300-year-old being the equivalent of a 40-year-old today.
You got it. There is absolutely no prospect whatsoever of extending frail life. Frail people are in a bad way. Being frail is risky. You will die fairly soon if you're frail. Therefore, the way to extend healthy life, to postpone the debilitation of aging, is to keep people youthful.
Okay, so from a scientific perspective, how do you go about delaying or even stopping aging?
Ultimately, it's a repair and maintenance job. And that's really good news. That's the first piece of really good news, because it means that it will be applicable to people who are already in middle age before we start, people who have accumulated a substantial but still manageable amount of molecular and cellular damage. So what we have to do is essentially repair those various types of molecular and cellular damage that accumulate throughout our lives as a side effect of our normal metabolic processes. That means, for example, there are various tissues in which cells die and are not naturally replaced by the division of other cells. So we use, for example, stem cell therapy to replace those cells biomedically. Another aspect of aging is the accumulation of indigestible molecules of various sorts, things that the cell makes sometimes by accident as a side effect of normal metabolic processes, but that then the cell does not know how to get rid of, does not know how to destroy or excrete or whatever, and those things accumulate and eventually they cause problems like cardiovascular disease or neurodegeneration or macular degeneration in the elderly. We need to figure out how to get rid of that stuff. Mutations accumulate and they cause cancer. We need to figure out how to cope with that problem. And there are a relatively small number of such categories.
So basically what you're saying is isolate all the different areas where people die from, quote, natural causes. And if you can pinpoint all of those, conceivably, from an engineering perspective, you can stop them all.
That's exactly right. And the critical thing is to intervene at the right point in the chain of events. We will never succeed in, as I mentioned a moment ago, keeping people alive in a frail state, which is what a geriatrician tries to do, and of course it's a very much a losing battle. If you intervene a bit earlier in the chain of events, and you intervene in these originating phenomena, the things that accumulate and eventually cause disease, then you don't have this problem of the downward spiral of things getting harder and harder.
So at what age are you talking about? When do you start intervening?
I think that's going to change with time as the therapies get more and more sophisticated. But initially, I think the ideal age to intervene will be maybe 55, 60, 65 sort of time.
Really? I mean, you would wait that long?
Sure. ultimately, in the same way that you don't take a car into the garage 1 month after you bought a brand new car, it doesn't have enough damage to need any repair. You wait until it's got a certain amount of damage, and then you take it in. So similarly, a middle-aged person is not dead yet, and they're still doing okay, but there's enough gone wrong with them at the molecular and cellular level that there's a respectable amount of restoration to be done to make them biologically young adults again.
So is that to say that once you start doing these body repairs, whatever you want to call them, that people will kind of forever look like they're 55 or 60 years old?
Absolutely. Certainly, if you're making people biologically youthful on the inside, you'll certainly be able to make them biologically youthful on the outside as well.
But are you actually talking about reversing the aging process?
Absolutely.
That's so people would actually start to look younger then?
Absolutely. If you take a middle-aged person, we're not going to keep them in middle age, either internally or externally. We bona fide rejuvenation, restoring people to a biologically younger state.
Now, you have talked about some of these different processes that you would do, and in your writing, you've identified seven big categories of aging.
That's right.
You're saying that each one of those, theoretically, scientists could stop. Has anyone come close to stopping any one of these processes?
Oh, absolutely. This is not theory, really. This is, you know, engineering design, if you like. This is technology. And some of these things are further away than others, certainly. Otherwise, we wouldn't be as long as 30 years away from getting the whole thing to work. But some of the things we need to do already in clinical trials, absolutely. So, for example, stem cell therapies are, of course, hot news, not just in the lab, but also some stem cell therapies are being applied clinically already. I mentioned the elimination of indigestible molecules. So one type of indigestible molecule that really matters is stuff called amyloid that accumulates not inside cells but in the spaces between cells. And there's clinical trials going on to get rid of the amyloid that accumulates in the brain in Alzheimer's disease, and people are very hopeful that that will have a major effect. Some things are not working in humans yet, but they're working in mice reasonably well. Things like getting rid of cells that are accumulating, not necessarily because they're proliferating uncontrollably, but because they're not dying when they should. That's a somewhat different problem. Some things are really still at the stage of cell culture, of individual cells in a dish, rather than whole animals, even mice. And those are things that maybe won't get to whole animals for another maybe 10 years if we're unlucky, and then another maybe 10 or 20 years after that before they are clinically available.
But what about something like cancer, which is one of the items on your list? I mean, scientists have been trying for decades to stop cancer, and you know, when people talk about the war on cancer, how close are we to ending cancer?
That's a very good question. And for sure, the reason why cancer is on my list is because it is correct to regard cancer as part of aging. In fact, it's correct to regard cancer as the hardest part of aging to fix, because unlike everything else, cancer has natural selection at its disposal. Every cell in the cancer is this, you know, furnace of inventiveness, so to speak. Yeah, what do we do? The approach that I've proposed to addressing cancer is extremely ambitious and extremely elaborate, and that's precisely because the war on cancer has been such a failure. Now, when I say a failure, of course, the war on cancer, it's a good thing that it happened. We have made more progress than we would have done if the budget of the NCI had not been trebled in 71 or whatever it was. But obviously, things have been much, much slower than was predicted back then. The reason things have been slower is because cancer is so hard to fix, and that's because evolution is so ingenious.
Can you briefly outline that?
Sure. So what makes cancer a problem is, of course, it's unlimited cell division. And one thing we know for sure and certain about cell division is that every time a cell divides, the chromosome ends, the telomeres get shorter. So the reason that cancers are able to get big enough to kill us is because they turn on a system, one of two systems, to combat that problem, to elongate the ends of the chromosomes. I want not simply to inhibit that system, which a number of other people are looking at. I want to delete the genes that are necessary for those systems to work.
Why do you want to live so long?
I don't actually, you're asking the wrong question there, because I don't actually have any particular fixation about living a long time. I don't even know whether I want to live to 100. The thing is, though, I do know that I want to make that choice when I'm 99. I don't want to have that choice gradually removed from me by my declining health.
You must want to live a long time. I mean, I can't imagine. I mean, you are a man on a mission here. You've devoted your whole life, in a way, to trying to extend longevity. I can't imagine that you wouldn't want to live to be very old yourself.
Well, you really are wrong. I am driven predominantly by humanitarian goals. I don't like to see people getting frail and decrepit and dependent and miserable and dead. I like to give people the chance. I want to save lives. I want to alleviate suffering and save lives.
But why? I mean, why not take the opposite reaction and say, well, death is a natural part of life. That's just part of what it means to be human.
I'm not eliminating death with this. It's just trying to eliminate one particularly nasty cause of death. People are still going to get hit by trucks, and I'm not working to stop that from happening.
You actually see this as an ethical imperative to extend lifespan.
I would go so far as to say it's more than just an ethical imperative. It's a psychological imperative as well. This is how we are. What would be unnatural would be to say, oh dear, you know, we should ignore our ability and our desire to actually, you know, keep healthy and save lives and so on, because it's different from all the things we've done before. What's natural for the human being is to explore their ability to change their world for the better.
That's Aubrey de Grey, Chief Science Officer of the Methuselah Foundation.